Each week, a single speaker is chosen from the many for their service to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And now, Valley Group World Headquarters is proud to announce the winner of the Outstanding Speaker of the Week. The nominee for this category has a sobriety date of 5/25 of 2005. He has been in continual service to the Fellowship as a secretary at numerous meetings, a literature person, a treasurer, and the most important job in the Fellowship, a sponsor. He doesn't have an AA saying or motto, but if he does, you're going to hear it during his pitch. May I have the envelope, please? The winner of the Outstanding Speaker of the Week is Billy C. from Fresno.
My name's Billy. I'm an alcoholic. Well, I really haven't won too much in my life, but this is a first. You know, I'm a winner of a one-horse race this month. Like I said, my name is Billy. I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank Bill for asking me to come and share this meeting. I saw him a couple months over at the in Fresno at the NCCAA conference, and while I was there, he asked me if I'd come and do this. But he didn't know exactly what month it was going to be. So that was in January. So in about the next 3 or 4 weeks, I heard from him, and he said May. So that gave me 3 months. No problem. But as the time, it got closer and closer to the date, and I thought, I got to show up here on Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. The fear starts setting in, you know, and I come down here tonight full of fear. It's one of the hardest things I do in Alcoholics Anonymous is get up and do a speaker meeting. I have to be honest, you know, this is tough for me. But when I'm asked to do something, I just show up and I do it, you know. I do have a sobriety date. It's May 25th of 2005. You know what? Before I go any further, man, I want to congratulate the Chip Takers. That's an awesome deal, man. You know, I see the sparkle in your eyes. You come across the stage, man, and I just think that you all have a chance. You all have a chance at this deal called recovery, you know. So anyway, like I said, my date's May 25th, 2005. I've got a home group. It's Life on Life's Terms Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's kind of a lot of program people there. That's where I got my start. It's a meeting that we did away the candlelight meeting. When they passed the seventh tradition during the candlelight meeting, they stole the money. So they had to start turning the light off on. They couldn't pass that seventh tradition during candlelight meeting. I've got a sponsor. His name's Pat. In fact, one of your members here did a 12-step call on him, and he's been sober ever since. Ray A. Some of you might know him. He did a 12-step call on him in Fresno there, and he's been sober ever since, you know. And I meet with him. I meet with him every week. It's one of the requirements I do to sponsor people. I have to meet with my sponsees once a week, and I have to see him once a week. I have to look in his eye, and I've been doing that for almost 8 years, ever since I got him as a sponsor. Every night. I've missed one. I was really sick, and I missed a half a meeting when I went to a memorial for somebody. So I've missed 1.5 meetings in almost 8 years. At that men's meeting. I It's a commitment. Just like it's a commitment to everybody else that I sponsor and he sponsors. And we meet at that meeting. Let's see. That out of the way. I'm a third generation farmer. I think that's important because when I got here, I didn't think anybody did what I did. And until I seen somebody wearing boots in a meeting, I didn't think that there was any farmers in Alcoholics Anonymous. Since then, I've learned quite a bit. But you know what? I always was a little bit, I wanted to be unique, you know, but I'll get into that. But I grew up on a ranch, my family, hardworking dirt farmers, right? Basically, and you know what? I grew up, my dad was an alcoholic. He died of cirrhosis liver when I was 14 years old. I had some loving people in my life, man. They loved me to death. I had an uncle in my life that stepped in to be that father figure in my life. And he almost practically loved me to death. I've got 35 minutes to try to give you what I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm not going to get into a big drunkalog. But I can tell you this. I'll start in around 2003. My life was full of fear, and that's why I drank, by doing some inventories. And in 2003, in a drunken stupor, almost 10 years ago, exactly to the day, I knocked a propane bottle off in my garage. And my uncle had, you know, I'd been in and out of prison. I thought if I always had enough money, I'd be okay. If I just had enough money, I'd be all right. I mean, I'm locked up all the time. I get out, and they enable me to death. So in the 90s, I picked up a case, and I'm locked up. And the day I picked up the case, my uncle passed away. And my uncle was never married. He spent all his life working, taking care of his sister, and saved his money. He didn't have anybody to leave that money to, so he left it to my brother and I, and he left me a home. Fully paid for. So when I got out, I thought, okay, now it's on. You know what? I have enough money. I have a home to live in. It'll be okay. So I parole. I go home, and I start living in this home, right? And that was in the 90s, in 2003. In a drunken stupor, I knock a propane bottle off in a garage. It lands right on the tip, and it tweaks it just enough to turn into it started leaking propane, and when that propane hit the hot water heater, it exploded and blew up. And when it exploded and blew up, I was running out of the kitchen, and I saw the windows, the dual pane windows melt, and I burned that home to the foundation, every pair of pants, every stitch of clothing I had, every family picture I had ever accumulated, every important document in my life went up in smoke. And I didn't have insurance on it. If you're anything like me, I've become real irresponsible. I quit paying insurance on it, and I thought, don't trip. I'll build another one, you know, because that's the way it was. And so I sat out in front of a rock in front of my home, and I watched that thing burn to the ground. So I went out to a friend's house, and I'm living with him. And a couple days later, in their investigation, they thought I had a lab going, but in their investigation, they went in and they found outside issues in there, and they went in and they put a warrant out for my arrest. So my friend went to town, and he comes back, he brings the paper, the local paper home, and he shows me, and my picture's on the front page of the my local paper. So my best thinking is, oh, I got to get out of here, so I'll go to Fresno. I'll dye my hair bleach blonde, send my cousin in. I'm 52 years old, I'm 50 at the time. I send his cousin into town to get some bleach blonde hair. He brings it back, and I dye my hair blonde, and I go to Fresno. I'm on the run, don't you know? And I stand out, you know. I mean, hell. I'm living on this guy's floor, you know what? And I'm riding a little bike, and I can't get off the corner of Belmont and Van Ness. I don't know if anybody you know over there. There's a methadone clinic right there, and I've got other problems too. And I can't get off that corner, man. I'm on a little bike, thinking I'm going somewhere. And they had got this warrant out for my arrest, and they finally picked me up. And I go to jail, you know, and you know what, I'm used to jail. I fit in pretty well. So I figured, well, they'll just send me back one more time. And what happened was she gave me Prop 36. And I had never heard of Prop 36 before. I'd never really cared too much about getting sober. So she told me she was going to give me a chance, and she put me on this program if I wanted that. And I thought, well, okay, I can do that. So they let me out, you know, and they let me out of jail, and I went back to doing what I was doing. So I got picked up again, and I'm violating, and I'm sitting back in that county jail, and I go back in front of that judge, and she says she's going to give me another chance. So I said, all right. So they let me out again. And I go right back to doing what I always do. You know what? I have no tools in recovery. I just, I know what to do. So I get picked up again, and I go back to jail, and she sends me back to another program. And this time she sent me to a recovery home, a live-in place. And it was called, I get into that, but it doesn't really matter. But I was going to the Alano Club when I was in that program. And when I went to the Alano Club, I didn't never hear nothing. I'd been coming to Alcoholics Anonymous for years, but I never heard anything there. But I seen something that night when I got there. And my old buddy that I grew up with, that I figured he was going to die just like I was going to die, was in there talking about he had 6 years in this program. And I walked up to him after that meeting, and I told him, Charlie, I says, you're an effing liar. People like you and I, we don't stay sober. We don't clean up. We either go to prison for life or we die. And he was on fire for this program. And he says, Bill, he says, if you want what I got here, here's my phone number. Obviously, I didn't. I got well real quick. And about 45 days later, I was still in that program. I do what I always do. You know what? And they asked me to leave. And I ended up back on the streets, you know. But what happened, I got picked up again. I go back in front of that judge. She's running out of, she's getting burnt out, man. And the DA told her, give him the time. And she says, you know what, this is my courtroom. I'll do what I want to do. So she sent me to an outpatient program. And I was sitting there, and I'm testing dirty every time they test me. And they asked me, you know what, Bill, if we get you a bed, will you take it? I said, sure, I'll take it. So I wanted to put a little distance between that judge and I. So I went over and I turned my side. I went over there. And I walk in there, and if you're anything like me, the waiting room's a little bit too cold. I'm restless, irritable, and discontent. I need a drink, and I know what to do, man. I turn around, I leave that program, the very program that's going to save my life. I wait for the bus, I walk out in front of that program, I get on the bus, and I take off. And I go right back to doing what I always do. Another 60 to 90 days later, you know what? I end up back in front of her again, and she's shaking her head, and she's sending me back to that program. I walk into that program one more time with everything I've got on the back of my back. And I walk in there, I'm waiting in there, and I'm restless, irritable, and discontent, and their orientation is a little bit too long. And I turn right around from that program, and I leave the very place that's going to save my life. I turn my back on the only good thing that's ever going to happen to me. I've done it for years. I did it around Alcoholics Anonymous. I did it to you people. I turn my back on you. Every time I come into the rooms, you know what, I just want to get my court card signed. I didn't want nothing you had. I turn my back on the very good, and I do this time and time and time again. So I leave that program, I catch the bus, and I go back to doing what I'm always doing, you know what, and I end up back in front of that judge again, and she's shaking her head, and the DA's pulling his hair out, and she says, this is my courtroom, I'll do what I want to do. And she sends me back over there. Before, when I got there, I always had a little money in my pocket. This time I got there with $3 I had borrowed that morning. I got off the bus, and I walked into that program. And I went there to stay because I knew she was getting burnt out. I didn't go there for recovery. I went there because I knew that Judge was getting burnt out, and she was getting ready to send me back. So I walked in there, and I stayed. And I thought, I can stay any place for 30 days. I can do that anywhere. I've been in jail a million times. And so I thought, well, I got to stay. So I stayed there, you know what? And on about the third day I was there, I'm sick. I'm a mess. I've lost all dignity. Anything I ever had going for me, I pissed it away. I wrecked every car I ever owned. I burned the home down that was given to me. I screw everything up I ever hold. Life is just too tough. So I'm sitting over there, man, and I want to do something different. I'm not sure what I want, but about the third day come, this church came up, man. And I knew I don't go to church. I don't go to church today. But church came up, and I got in that bus, and I went down to that church, you know what? And I heard something that night that I knew if I died, where I was going. And I'm not a religious person, and I don't know where that came from. But I surrendered to this disease. I got a problem, and I surrendered way down into my gut, a place I had never been in my heart before. I'd never been in that place, that location in my gut, man, where I did that raw surrender. I said, man, God, if you're there, please help me. And he removed the obsession to drink and use, man. He took that from me. Now, I'm not saying that's going to help you. That's my experience with this, my problem. And you know what? I knew God had entered my life at that moment. I knew it. Because when that obsession was removed, something I had lived with since I first took my first drink at 14 years old, I always wanted one more. If I just have one more, it's going to be okay. If I just get one more, it's going to be all right. And I lived with that obsession all those years. And when that was lifted, and I didn't care whether I had another drink, I knew it was going to be okay. And I knew there was only one person who would do that. Not my uncle, not my mom, nobody. And that was God. I knew that. So what happened was I went back, and it was like a weight of the world was lifted off my shoulders. Things got easy for me. And I didn't know what to do, but I knew what I didn't want. And H&I, thank God for H&I, they came into that program, and I heard people up there, you know, sharing stories that I did. And I always thought I was crazy. You know, people said, Bill, you do crazy shit, man. I was going to get 5150, 24/7 tattooed on me. And people told me, you do crazy shit, Bill. And I knew it, but I didn't know why, you know. And H&I came in, they started telling my stories, and I started relating. And they told me, you know what, on your first 24 hours out of there, make a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And for the first time in my life, when I left that program, I took direction and I made a meeting. I found my home group. I walked from the sober living house environment that I was at to that home group that I now call my home group. And I walked in there and I sat down, man, and I heard again people sharing honestly and openly. Thank God for honesty, because they were sharing my story. They had been in the same places I had been in. They had gone to the same places I'd gone. They felt the same way I had. Alcoholism had destroyed their lives just like it had destroyed mine. It took them through the ringer, just like it had me. So I fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. Literally fell in love with you people. And I kept going back. The meeting was probably, I don't know, half a mile away. I made 3 meetings a day there. I just kept going back. Made a lot of great friends. I was living in, everything was, I was living in a sober living home. They were bringing food. They were, all I had to do was go to meetings and come home. Go to meetings and come home. And I'm going to meetings. I'm feeling pretty good, you know what? But I know there's something. I hear people talking about a sponsor and working these steps. And it comes a time in my life where I know that I'm going to drink again if I don't do something different. So a little while after I got there, I said, I better get a sponsor. My friend came in and he got a sponsor, and I said, God dang it, he can't get a sponsor and me not have one. So I got the same sponsor he got. And the friend that followed me in the room came in and says, well, damn it, you can't have a sponsor without me having a sponsor. So he got the same sponsor I got. So there was three of us being sponsored by the same guy at the same time. So, he asked me some questions, you know, if I knew I was an alcoholic, if I was really believing a power greater than myself, if once I got this, I was willing to turn, if I was willing to pass this thing on, you know, and if I was willing to go to any length. Now, I didn't know what that was going to entail, if I was willing to go to any length, but I stayed on the bus for 7 years, riding that bus around town. You know, to meetings, to commitment meetings, to be where I was, to say I was where I was going to say I was going to be there, you know, and I was on the bus doing it. And I used to sponsor men out of the Salvation Army, and I'd be on the bus in the big book going down to Salvation Army trying to carry the message over the guys, you know. I don't know if they stood sober, but I did. He had me on my knees doing my third step prayer, and we got immediately into the fourth step. He told me, Bill, if you're willing to do this deal, I'll have you through doing amends in 90 days. Now, you know what, early on they were doing amends in way before that, but I thought 90 days, well, he's asking for quite a bit, ain't he? So, but you know what? This process began. You know what? I was willing to go to any length. I was willing to do this deal. I was dying as desperate could be. So we got in my fourth step. You know what? I did a fifth step, and that's where I learned about my fears. I was full of fear. Always full of fear. I talked about it coming down here tonight. You know what? People, I never measured up. I was always less than. I can remember early on going to kindergarten, man. If I just had a damn drink, man, I could fit in here. I just fit in and see me. If I could have had a drink in kindergarten, I would have given it to me, man. I'd have taken it. And, you know, 14 years later, when I was a freshman in high school, I found the solution for me. It was in a bottle, you know, and that's when I fit in. So, I found out a little about my friend, and I shared that stuff with him. You know, I remember when I got into that fourth step, I called him one night. He had me doing 90 meetings in 90 days, and he called him one night. And I said, you know what? I says, I'm starting to write this stuff down, and I said, I don't think this program's for me. And he started laughing. And he says, Bill, he says, I'm not asking for the world. He says, all I'm asking you to do is sit down 5 or 10 minutes every morning and write a little bit. Can you do that? I can do that. So I did that. So, he got me through that process. He sat down with me and listened to my fifth step. Now, I told you about the obsession being removed. I didn't have a big, big white light experience with the fifth step. But what happened for me when I did the fifth step was I, for once, was doing something different. I was doing Alcoholics Anonymous. I felt like I really fit in. I was really doing the deal. So that's what came out of my fifth step. I saw my part in a lot of that stuff. For years, it had been your fault. You were why I drank. Fear's where I drank. But for once, you know what, I seen my part in stuff, you know, and so we moved on through 6 and 7, and he had me learn the 7-step prayer. And I shaved the 3rd and the 7-step prayer to this day, every morning. Every morning. That's how I begin my day. 8 and 9, I got some, I did 8 and 9 with I'll link the men's list. Some Graveside with my brother. I went to my brother, you know, and my brother and I, we did a lot of stuff together, and he was just like me. So I went to him, and I said, Timmy, I said, you know what? I said, I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous now, and I said, I never want to drink again. And I said, I'm here to make amends for some of my past behavior. I said, do you know what amends are? He looked at me, and serious eye, and he says, ain't that what Earl does? And I said, yeah, that's what Earl does. And he says, you know what? He says, I got some amends I want to make with you. And he says, you bring an olive branch to me. He says, I want to make some amends. So he went on for a half hour before I could get mine in. And so I made amends. I made amends to my mother. My mother was another one of my greatest enablers, you know. Year and a half sober, I went down to my mom. She's in the hospital, and I pull out my chip, bright 1 year chip, and I show her, Mom, I'm in AA now. I'm doing good. She says, well, when are you going back? I says, Mom, if I continue doing what I'm doing, I'll never go back. And she still looked at me with, you know, and she says, oh, you must be on the methadone program. So I knew then I was going to have to show her, you know. And my mom, she got sick. I was able, you know, to help her. I'll get to that. I ran into my cousin at the mall, and I'm with my sponsor, and I had made amends to my cousin. His daughter walked up to us at the mall, and she started crying. She said, you thank those people in AA for giving us our cousin back. So some of my amends have been great, good deals, man. You know what? Healing processes. One of my amends is to my mom. My mom got sick, you know what? And 2 years ago she passed away. And they the biggest thief in the family, they left all her paperwork, everything for me to take care of. All of that stuff, you know, and it was a blessing, man. It was a way I felt I could never do nothing for my mom, never. And it was a way that somehow I could make amends for my mom, you know. I do 10, 11, my 10th steps are real shaky. I do them, you know what, I do them in my head, and I know what they say about an inventory doing in your head ain't an inventory, but I know when I'm off base, you know what, and I get with my sponsor, and I'll sit down, and I'll talk with him, and I'll put it down on paper. He's given me some tools in this program, you know, and to do a four-step, and to do that whole to see my part in that, you know, and I can do it, a spot check inventory any time of the day when I'm getting off center. So I do 10, I do 11, I do my prayer and meditation. I do that third step, my seventh step prayer every morning. I just ask God for me to help somebody during the day, you know, and the 12th step, you know, carrying this message, you know, and it's part of the fun for me. I love to see the light come on in somebody's eyes, you know, when we're sitting down and put that book between me and somebody else, you know what, to see them, you know, get it. I've had the opportunity to sponsor a bunch of guys. I sponsored all colors. One of the first ones I sponsored was a black guy. I came out of prison with a lot of prejudices. First fifth step I heard was his. And I found out that he bled and he felt just like I did. He had the same emotional hang-ups, the same feelings that I did. You know, God puts people in our lives, man. I've taken a lot of people through the steps, and they haven't all stayed sober, but I know I have. Got a few people I'm working with now. One of the big things, you know, was I always wanted to go back to school. I started going to school, and one of the things I was drinking, I couldn't make that commitment, so I quit. And so I went back to school in 2006, and I eventually, after 3.5 years, I graduated from Fresno City. I went on to Fresno State, and I eventually, in 2012, I graduated from Fresno State. Last year, so then I had to go out and put it to use, right? I got to get a job. So I'm putting resumes all over, and you know, I'm trying to be honest on this stuff, man. I got to tell people what I've done, you know, and so, because, you know, I'll tell you, man, I never want to walk in to work wondering, is this today the day they find out about all my felonies? A while back, I went to a job interview, and I sat down across with this human resources lady, and she, one of the questions on the application was, have you ever any felonies? And I put, yeah, and I listed it. So I sat down in front of her, and she asked me what it was, and I told her I had a felony back in 2003. And she says, oh, Bill, don't worry. She says, we believe in second chances. So she says, is that it? And I says, no, it's not it. I says, there's one in, that was in 2003. There's one in 90, there was one in 93. And she says, okay. And I got a little bit smaller. And she says, well, is that it? And I says, no, that's not it. I said, there was one back in 1988. And I got a little bit smaller in my chair, and I felt a little bit lower, and I just wanted to back out of that room. I felt small. So I walked out of there, you know, and I wanted to run one more time. A couple of months ago, I had a little job with the IRS, and there was a job came up, and I went into it for an interview, and one more time, I put down on there that, you know what, I got this felony. And they, everything was looking good, and they asked me, they didn't ask me about it, and they put me in another room. And a lady came in, and they wanted me to wait to do it. It was another little test area that I had to test. And this lady comes in, and she says, Bill, she says, we forgot to ask you about your felony. And so she says, can you explain it to me? And I'll go in and tell them. So I explained it to her. She says, well, did they drop it to a misdemeanor? I says, no. And she says, well, did they, have they, you know, when they seal your records, have they sealed it? I says, no. And she says, well, let me go talk to the people. So she went back in there and she talked to the people. And you know what? My mind immediately went there. You know what? F it. I just might as well leave right now. You know what? And anyway, she came back in there and she says, you know what? The guy that's doing the hiring wants to talk to you. So anyway, he came in and he told me I got the job. So I'm working right now. I'm self-supporting through my own contributions. For once, it's not the state, but I'm trying to do the deal in, you know, life, It's been an amazing journey for me, man. And it's because of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've made some great friends. Three of them rode down with me tonight. You know, we had good conversation on the way down. And they kept me out of my head. I think if I was to say something to a newcomer, man, it's, stick around. Let us get to know you. You know what? I never thought this thing would work for me. I never thought the big book, my solution was going to be in a book. I never thought that I would find help in a fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. But that's exactly what happened. I was hopeless when I got here, and you people gave me hope. You fill me up. I'll sit here today and I'm nothing without you. I owe my life and everything I stand for to Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, I just I think I'm about talked out. And but anyway, you know what? To the chip takers, to the people, you know what? Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous, man. And I just encourage you to keep coming back. Thank you.